Good morning, everyone. I'm not Amy Pilley. My name is Tony Cahill. Amy asked me to do the beginning of this presentation because she came into this project a little bit after it had begun, so she asked me to do some of the background things. Our acknowledgments, our disclosure, this work was supported by the Administration on Community Living, and prior to that, by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Other than that, we're incredibly boring and have nothing to disclose that would be of any interest to you. There are two contextual things that I want to talk about in terms of why we decided to move into the area of virtual health promotion interventions. The first one is organizational. We are at the University of New Mexico. We have a multi-year cooperative agreement with the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation Paralysis Resource Center. And as part of my job at UNM, I'm the research director for the PRC. It's funded by ACL. Up until this year, the PRC was funded by the Centers for Disease Control. So we've made that switch, which is interesting. And for those of you who are not familiar with the Paralysis Resource Center, it's a relatively well-funded organization which serves a very robust set of services to people who are paralyzed. There are 6 full-time information specialists. There is a national peer and family support program. We give out about $1 million a year in quality of life grants to organizations who work with people who are paralyzed. There's a very comprehensive, some might say over-comprehensive website, streaming videos. We have a speakers bureau. So the PRC is set up to provide information and resources to people who are paralyzed, their families, caregivers, professionals working with them. But one of the things about the PRC is that most of our services, and reactive might be not quite the right word here, but we are structurally not set up to go out and proactively work with people who are paralyzed. So the PRC is not structured in such a way so that we have staff who can go out and do health promotion interventions in the style of Living Well with a Disability or others. So that was the first thing that led us to think about, is there an alternative way that we might be able to reach people who are paralyzed in terms of health promotion? The second contextual factor is some of the characteristics of the population we serve. We are now in the early stages of replicating or analyzing a population-based survey of about 70,000 U.S. households, looking at disparities, health disparities among people who are paralyzed. It replicates a 2008-2009 study. And this is just a very quick snippet. People with paralysis, and we use a functional definition of paralysis. Paralysis is an inability or difficulty in moving the upper or lower extremities due to a condition of the central nervous system. So we distinguish between the causes of paralysis, for example, stroke, spinal cord injury, and so on, and the paralysis itself. So the figures you see here, the middle column, is from some preliminary figures from this population-based survey we're just now working on. And about 74% of people with paralysis are classified as overweight or obese, while about 62% of the general population is classified from the CDC Disability and Health Data Set. The figures on the right are taken. 59% of people with paralysis reported their health as poor or fair 14 or more days. Only 17% of the population did. And about 46% of people who were paralyzed reported that their physical health wasn't good 14 or more days, whereas just about 12% did. So given these two things, this is some of the characteristics of the population we serve, and given the fact that we are, as an organization, at this point not as structured in such a way to move out into the traditional on-site health promotion interventions, the question became, can we have an impact on knowledge and behaviors of the PRC client base using a virtual health promotion intervention. And that led us to do a scan of the research, and I want to be very clear, we did not do a systematic review. We did not spend 2 years going through the entire research base. We wanted to know if it was worth our while proceeding with a non-traditional health promotion intervention. Was there any evidence out there that said these things could be efficacious? And what we found, and there are references at the end of the presentation, but there are, in fact, some systematic reviews out there, two or three of them, of the literature on this, and the general conclusion is, in fact, that they can be effective in changing both knowledge as well as behaviors. The effect sizes tend to be fairly small, in some cases smaller than the traditional on-site health promotion intervention. Reach tends to be lower than traditional health promotion interventions, and attrition tends to be higher in a virtual health promotion intervention. But the literature, which is, I must say, I think still in its infancy, did tell us that careful attention to what we might think as cosmetic things, graphics, interactive activities, links to other resources, tend to make virtual health promotion interventions more efficacious. So we had what we wanted. There was, in fact, in our feeling, a reason to proceed with this. So what we did is we got together a team. The team was a multidisciplinary team. It included people from the Paralysis Resource Center in Short Hills, New Jersey, the vice president of media, their director of communications, and there were some others. Here at the University of New Mexico, some of our health promotion staff and health educator staff, including Amy. And then from the CDC, because at this time we were still funded by the Centers for Disease Control when we began this, we hooked into some of their multimedia staff and their health promotion staff. And over the course of about 6 months, we designed, and this is a typo, it was not 8 weeks, it was a six-week intervention consisting of 8 HTML-based emails, each on a related topic, and I'll show you what those were in a moment, and I'll show you some examples in a moment. Connected to that, we designed a new website that was very specifically linked to this health promotion intervention. So people felt when they were going to the website for additional resources, additional information, that we weren't just sending them to some general purpose website. It was linked to the main PRC website, but it was specifically targeted, focused, titled at people who were going to participate in this intervention. Once we had the emails ready, we sent initial follow-up recruitment emails to the client list, our electronic client list, which had at that time about 7,000 people who had registered with the PRC, asking them if they would like to take part in this health promotion intervention. And just over 10% said they would, which we thought was not bad, given the fact that this was solicited like this. And, you know, it's never clear why people sign up with an organization and what their real role is when they want to be on your newsletter. But we were satisfied with the 10%. At the end of the six-week period, not the eight-week period, we sent out an invitation to complete an online survey. Got about a 38% response rate. We were not terribly happy with that. One of the difficulties is, for a whole series of reasons, we delayed the evaluation for about 5 weeks after they completed it, and we think that that had a negative impact probably on our response rate. So here are, and I'll just let me put them up all together. Here were the six emails. The first one was, make some healthy lifestyle changes, and it was thanking them for agreeing to participate. The second was on the link between food, drink, and physical activity. The third was adding some exercise for people who are paralyzed. for people who are either on chairs or have some mobility limitations. The next one was how to decode nutrition labels on foods that you buy from the grocery store. And as Amy will tell you in a couple of minutes here, that was not our most wildly popular. 10 easy ways to eat healthier was the next one. And then the last one was kind of a summative email, which kind of tried to get them to stay motivated. So here's an example of one of the emails that we sent out. Congratulations on deciding to make some healthy changes. And this is the red circle there is the link to the interactive website. So let me turn it over to Amy to give you some findings.
Some of the findings. First, our in for the survey responses was 288. So this is the profile of the people who responded. About 50-50 female-male, 86% white, 12% Asian, 1-2% African-American and other. 96% reported being Hispanic or Latino, and those are the age brackets right there. So this bottom part right here is who responded to the survey on behalf of the person with paralysis, or if it wasn't the person with paralysis themselves. So who actually responded to the survey? Okay. Here's the regional distribution. That's been driving me crazy all day. So here's the regional distribution. About 48%. We're in the Pacific, West, North, Central, or East, North, Central regions only. So pretty focused in those three areas, but generally good distribution. All right, so here's what Dr. Cahill was talking about. Participation over time, or who read the emails as they were received. So the question that we asked on the survey was listed below are the topics and dates of the health promotion e-newsletters that you received. Please tell us which ones you read. And so in the red, you see we were up at about 75% for the first three, and then the fourth one, decoding nutrition labels, maybe because of the excitement of the topic, we don't know, was a little bit down. So, and then it raised back up again, so we were happy with that. All right, so we asked, in general, what type of impact would you say the e-newsletters have had on your quality of life? So this is one of the things we're most interested in, definitely. 77% said that there was very positive or positive impact on their quality of life, so that was great. And we asked about the amount of information that we included in the emails. In the couple of screenshots that Dr. Cahill showed you, that was those two screens were one email. So that was, we maintained pretty much that same amount in all of them. So 28% said there was too little information or way too little information. So that's encouraging. We're like, well, what's the fine balance? You know, you don't want to give too much. I think we'd rather give a little too little, with 67% saying that there was just about the right amount, rather than give too much, you know. So that we're pretty happy with that as well. We asked about the impact on knowledge and behavior change. So in the pink, we see knowledge increase, and in the purple, we see behavior change. And so what we actually asked, in the knowledge increase, people just reported that they know more about the importance of physical activity or nutrition. And then the behavior change component related to physical activity was that they increased the amount of physical activity. And we did do it in like a past tense like that. So between the time that they received the emails and the time that their surveys went out, that they had already initiated change. So about 60% said that they had increased their amount of physical activity. And then the related to nutrition, the question was, have they made changes to their diet to eat healthier? So about 67% said that they, in fact, had done that. So at the bottom of the email, as Dr. Cahill pointed out, in the yellow circle, we included a link to the PRC website, the Fitness and Nutrition Center website. And so 54% of respondents to the survey said that they did go, that they did follow that link. I found this really encouraging because it shows that through this one intervention, we're actually providing access to a lot more information. And so we could include a lot more links with specific information for them to access if they wish to, which is really helpful for future planning, actually. Okay, so we asked, like, what did you do when you visited the Fitness and Nutrition Center website? So 88 people said that they read one or more pieces of written material, so probably read articles. 67 people said they watched a video on the website. Keep in mind, these could be the same people, they could be different people. We didn't include that information here. Okay, so we'll talk a little bit about our limitations and next steps. So we're not doing this presentation to demonstrate efficacy necessarily. This is really a pilot study to see, you know, what kind of feedback can we get back from these people? Is this something that we really should pursue? So these were our limitations. A small, pretty small sample, and it was a convenient sample. We just asked people if they'd be willing to complete the survey for us. We didn't have a control group, and it was obviously self-reported data. So this would be our ideal moving forward. We've talked about it a lot. We don't have actual, like, in-place plans, but we would definitely love to pursue this and see what we could do with a larger population. So that is it for our actual presentation. Here's our contact information, and we'd be happy to take questions here in a little bit.